that symplectic manifold associated to a two-dimensional scalar field. And then I want to show how you can go backwards. You can start from the Hamiltonian picture and then build, figure out the Lagrangian from the Hamiltonian. So let's consider again a 2D scalar. And theta is periodic. So in this system, I want to write down operators. Qn is the integral over the region theta equals 0 and similarly Pn is the same. So these measure position and momentum, the Fourier modes of position and momentum of my field at t equals 0. And we want to show that the Poisson bracket looks like delta n plus m. This is, I wrote it slightly differently yesterday, but this is the same kind of thing. So again, the point of this is just an exercise in figuring out how do we derive the canonical commutation relations from the Lagrangian without just declaring that they must be true, which is a little unsatisfying. So the technique is, so we consider, so we can place these operators at any point. So we have at 0, at t, and this is the Poisson bracket. Okay, so are you guys happy with like?
Yeah. So I don't see how Q and P depend on T because you set them to be at 0.
Yeah, that's it. I use bad notation. So let me fix that. What I wrote here was implicitly Qn at 0. So I put in a T here. So what was our technique? Like, how do we compute this kind of thing? Well, we use a Feynman diagram. So we use the propagator with one leg on Qn of 0, one leg on Pn of t, like this. OK. Now, we wrote down a Lagrangian, this manifold. And you, depending on your familiarity with this kind of thing, you may or may not be able to just look at this Lagrangian and immediately determine what the propagator is. So rather than doing that, let me just explain a very general technique for figuring out the propagator. So the propagator with one leg on qn of 0 is the field sourced by the operator. That is, we solve the equations of motion for the Lagrangian with source term. Trying to factor of a half. Plus the integral, maybe they expect this as a minus, doesn't matter. Okay, so this is our source term. This is our initial Lagrangian. And this is always, so this is always a neat way just to figure out what the propagator is in any theory, even gauge theories. It's just the field sourced by the thing you're inserting. So from this perspective, something like this, qn0 pnt looks like we're measuring this momentum of the field sourced by Qn. And what we're interested in is this discontinuity. So the field sourced by Qn is going to have not be continuous. And we're interested in the discontinuity. Are you guys happy with, maybe I asked this already, but like, you know, the intuition is like the product of operators is I do first 1 times 0, 1 at a time slightly in front, and I bring them together so they have the same time. And the product of the operators in the other order is I bring one from behind. So this really should be the commutator of operators. Okay, so how do we do this computation? We need to look at the field sourced by this guy. So if we solve, so the source equation is del t squared minus del theta squared phi theta t is delta function t equals 0 minus 2 pi I and theta. So this is actually not difficult to solve. We use the same technique we used in quantum mechanics. So the first approximation is you know, minus delta okay. this is pretty good. Is if I hit this with the second derivative of t, like at the right-hand side. But if I hit it with the second derivative of theta, well, I get something involving n squared. So I need to correct. So you correct it by adding something which, when I differentiate it with respect to t, cancels this theta derivative. That'll be something like delta t greater than or equal to 0, t cubed over 6. And then we have to keep going. There's further corrections. So the answer is it's minus delta t greater than or equal to 0 t e to minus 2 pi I n theta 1 plus a series in t squared n squared. Okay, everybody, this reason may be clear? So the reason for doing this is we want to check that we want to reproduce the answer we had before. So what do I get if I put qn0 and pm of t here? Well, this guy has one derivative. Sends phi to this integral. So it has a single derivative. So if I put that in here, so this thing
theta squared in the first correction.
Thank you. Okay, maybe I shouldn't be going through this in such detail. It's all not so hard. I look at the field sourced by one guy. I kind of calculate it roughly like this, just by some very simple manipulations, solving some differential equation series. And then I evaluate the other operator on it. I get this. Just taking by the definition of this other operator, I'm taking its momentum. So I'm differentiating with respect to t. And now I look, I have the first power of t, that'll go away. But the other powers of t, when I send t to 0, they won't contribute. When t goes to 0, the other terms in the series so we get this is SM. Therefore, Qn Pm is indeed delta n plus m. So, Qn times some derivatives if I did the same calculation, but I took some high derivative with respect to t instead of the first derivative, so I'm taking some derivatives of momentum, then, well, not really momentum, but, you know. Anyways, if I take some derivatives of p, then I would pick up these other terms in the series, and it would be some complicated thing. So you might think that's kind of weird, but this is not so surprising. Because del t should be given by the Poisson bracket with the Hamiltonian. If I take, you know, if I hit something with the Hamiltonian a bunch of times, it's going to be complicated. So in other words, the remaining terms in the series, their complexity reflects the fact that this system has an interesting Hamiltonian. Not a trivial Hamiltonian. OK, so the next thing is to compute the Hamiltonian, but any questions? Yeah?
Why isn't the first term 0? Because you have qn of 0, and qn has like a t term in front.
Like this one here? What?
In the first limit, at limit t equals 0 plus, you have a qn of 0, right?
Yes.
But the solution phi has a t.
Yeah, so I'm putting qn at 0. So phi is the solution sourced by putting qn at 0. Mm-hmm. Right? I put qn at 0, and it sources a field which has some dependence on t. I mean, just like in everyday life, if you have a source like a magnet, it sources something which depends on the distance to where you put your magnet. So what's this saying is like the profile of my field tends to zero as I approach the point of the source. And now I'm measuring the strength of that field at some other point. In fact, I'm measuring its derivative in t.
So in the end, you're just calculating the PM of t and putting the expression.
Yeah, exactly.
The source.
Yeah, I'm calculating a PM of t applied to the source. So PM of t is some measurement of the field at time t. OK. Any other questions?
Can you explain that part again, where so you wrote PM t sends phi to that?
Yeah, so PMT, it's an operator. It takes my field phi and produces a number. It like measures it. So, and again, you should. I think it's to conceptualize these things. I think it's really helpful to think in Euclidean signature, and my field is something very everyday, like pressure. I'm measuring the average of the pressure over this circle.
What happens to the next
step? On the next line? OK, so I'm just inserting my expression, which is this delta function, times t times so on. I'm inserting that in here. I'm replacing phi by that expression at the very top. And I skip the step where on the expression at the top, there's e to the minus 2 pi n of theta. And here we have e to the minus 2 pi m of theta. So that gives me a delta n plus m. And Well, that's the integral over theta, that's all it does. And then I have this derivative in t is the only other thing happening. Okay. Well, h of qn is del t qn says 0, 0, which is tn 0. However, h at pn t squared qn at 0. Yep, these guys still satisfy the equations of motion. So this is del theta squared qn, which is so because the equation's in motion, it says I can trade the second derivative of time, but the second derivative in theta, I pick up this factor of n when I do the time derivative of my operators. So these two equations are going to determine for me what the Hamiltonian is. Because I want to build some h. Well, I know what the Poisson bracket is. The Poisson bracket is very simple. I just now have to write down some h, which does this for me. So for the first term, it's just going to be that. Maybe with the minus sign. And the second term is if I take the Poisson bracket of this with q's, I'm going to pick up one of those terms times the corresponding pn. The second term is going to be something which sends a p to a q with this factor of n squared. So it must be something quadratic in q's. So it might be nice to rewrite this slightly. So was just to ensure that it's clear that it's in the conventions we've chosen, it's a negative definite. Okay. Any questions? Okay, maybe there's one more thing I want to discuss quickly before I move to how to go from Hamiltonian back to Lagrangian, which is usually, I imagine in your classes, when you discuss canonical commutation relations, you would say something like, would be something like phi of theta del t phi theta prime will be delta theta minus theta prime. So this is the usual thing you might see, right? So you might wonder how do we get this from this kind of expression? And so before I explain that, these expressions with the Fourier modes are kind of better behaved and more robust than this thing. This one is a little delicate. In Euclidean signature, this doesn't work. And we'll maybe sort of see why, because there's going from here to here, there's various orders of limits things that make things a little slightly tricky. But in any case, so what's phi n or theta? If the operator, which measures, so phi of theta, phi at theta equals 0, or indeed at any time you want. Now, we know if I have any function, I can figure out its value at a point from its Fourier modes. So Qn 0 measures the nth Fourier mode. So it's like integral . So this one is equal to the integral theta delta theta equals theta prime d theta phi theta 0. Where's it? So to write this one in terms of the q's, we have to realize that the delta function has a Fourier expansion. Theta prime is sum for all integers like that. So this implies the operator phi theta is the sum measuring phi at a point is obtained as an infinite sum of its Fourier modes. And similarly for p's. So phi theta LT phi theta prime is then the infinite sum Okay, and then we can quickly manipulate this to see that this is recovers the delta function. Because this is a delta function. Okay. So as I said, this is slightly delicate because if you wanted to really do this kind of thing carefully, you would look at the field sourced by the, by inserting the operator where I measure phi. And then there's some slightly delicate orders of limits things and with these infinite sums and the expansion of that field. So this really only works in Lorentzian signature. But OK, any questions? So now I hope you guys, you know, if I give you some Lagrangian, maybe some interacting scalar or something, whatever, you have some procedure to figure out the phase space, the Poisson bracket, and the Hamiltonian. The next thing I want to discuss is if you give me a Hamiltonian system, like a symplectic manifold, how to build a Lagrangian system which realizes it. So suppose M is a symplectic manifold. H is a Hamiltonian function. And let's suppose that a symplectic form omega is of the form omega is d alpha for alpha a one form. So we're going to be able to remove this condition later. So from this, I want to build a Lagrangian describing a particle moving in M.
Question. So like this Hamiltonian, now the modes P N and Q N doesn't depend on theta anymore, right?
No.
So like can I think of this Hamiltonian like is that Hamiltonian on a lattice or something?
Yes, I mean because yes. It's because No, we've chosen a basis for the functions on the circle, which is just the Fourier basis.
Yeah.
So that the Fourier transform really takes functions on the circle into a lattice.
Yeah, so like probably, so the reason why I'm asking is it's like, so like going from field theory to, going from Lagrangian of the fields to the Hamiltonian and what we are going to cover now, is this a good technique to transform like, so usually in condensed matter I start with Hamiltonian and a lattice, right?
Yeah, but the problem is this, when I'm in momentum space though, this Hamiltonian, when I view it as a lattice Hamiltonian,
yeah,
it's non-local. Because something at the nth site and something at the minus nth site are coupled. So this always happens. Things aren't very non-local on momentum space.
Okay.
Okay. So how do I build a Lagrangian for this? Well, the Lagrangian is very simple. Gamma is the integral over R of the pullback of this one form plus h dt. Okay, is everybody familiar with this pullback notation from, did you discuss it, Giuseppe, or should I? You did, okay. Okay, so the claim is that this Lagrangian re-describes the same system. So what will happen is the phase space for this Lagrangian is again M. So if I go to from the Hamiltonian picture to a Lagrangian and back, I get back to where I started. The equations of motion, that is like the classical trajectories, these are the same thing as flows for the vector field in my Hamiltonian system, a point in the phase space moves around by a flow determined by this, by the Hamiltonian. And if I solve the equations in motion, this path always follows those flows. So it has the same classical dynamics. So if we start with some Lagrangian, just like this. So the diagram, this diagram commutes. I might start with some Lagrangian system. And then I go to the Hamiltonian picture. And then I go back to the Lagrangian system. And these guys are equivalent. So this is slightly tricky, and we'll maybe say something about this matter later. So to check that this is a reasonable prescription, let's check Let's check this, that the equations of motion are the flows for the vector field. Unless there are any questions. So it might actually also help to see what this looks like in a local patch. In a patch of M, where omega is dpi wedge dqi, you can take alpha dpi wedge qi. And in this patch, gamma of t is then a time-dependent point. So I'll write gamma of t equals pi of t, qi of t. If the notation doesn't cause confusion, so the Lagrangian integral just looks like this. Okay, yes, everyone?
So alpha should be a one form. So is it PDQ or?
Oh, sorry, thank you. Thank you. So in this local patch, our goal is to check that the equations of motion are the Hamiltonian flow. So by varying p, if we vary p, we find dqi dt plus dh dpi and similarly we vary q. Well, if we vary q, we have to integrate by parts to move the t derivative over here, which picks up a sign, and that gives us minus del pi del t. Okay, so this is, can you guys see that this is what we want? So we call the vector field associated to H is del H del say PI del QI minus del H. Pi, i.e., the component pointing in the qi direction is del h del pi. And similarly, the component pointing in the pi direction. Minus del H del QI. So, sorry, I, as usual, made a sign error. There's some sign conventions. It's different, right? Now, if we look at this equation, this is like my, the derivative of my path is a vector, and this is the component of the vector pointing in the qi direction. Of this is the component of the tangent vector. To the path, which points in the qi direction. And this is equal to minus del h del pi. And that's the component of the Hamiltonian vector field. So if I solve the equations of motion, these paths always move along these flows. OK. Any questions about this? Well, if I want to write down this literal action, I need omega to be exact globally. But there's a way to generalize it when it's not exact, but when its cohomology class is integral. OK. Maybe there's a few other like, very simple things. You know, if I write down this Lagrangian, how do I know I get back to the same phase space? So the equations in motion. So this is a first order Lagrangian. Which that means that the Cauchy data just the initial value with no time, no derivatives. So in a second order Lagrangian, the initial data is given by the value at t equals 0 and the first derivative, and that fixes everything else. But here, because it's first order, everything is fixed just by the initial value. So the phase space is equal to M. So also check that PI QJ equals delta ij in these coordinates. So this is the same kind of game we've been doing. So if I have a scalar field, yeah, here P and Q are independent fields. And what we did before was we look at the propagator connecting position and momentum. We found that jumped when I crossed the origin. And the same thing will happen here, but it'll take a slightly different form because it's a first order Lagrangian. So the point is that let's forget about the Hamiltonian for now. It actually doesn't matter here. So the field sourced by pi at 0 satisfies d by dt qi of t is a delta function equals 0. So it is qi of t is the delta function for t positive. Just by looking at this equation, it's a first order equation. I vary p. The field it sources as d by dq is a delta function. So this immediately tells us that we have this combination relation. So the final thing I want to discuss briefly is, suppose we start, let's start with the usual second order description of a particle. We turn it into Hamiltonian, and then we turn it back into a Lagrangian. Do we get the same thing we started with? So let's check that. So if we start with the Lagrangian, phi integral over 4 p phi squared to the phase space has coordinates p and q, and the Hamiltonian is p squared. This is something we figured out before. So from this, we find the first order Lagrangian. Which is integral p of t del t q of t dt plus p of t squared dt. So why is this the same? That there's a standard technique for any time of a Lagrangian of this form where p, field p has a kinetic, has a mass term, but does not have a kinetic term. we can integrate out the field P in the path interval. So here's the technique. We look at this expression, and I want to complete the square so that it looks like something like this plus another term which has a square in it. So we first set, we set 5t. Basically, I want to get rid of this cross term. So then the Lagrangian becomes this right. Sorry. Lambda. This is a plus. So I'm just doing some extremely simple manipulation, very slowly. So we have set this up so that the cross terms involving lambda and del t cancel. So that's integral lambda squared plus a fourth del t q squared. Minus a half del t q squared. So together, these become minus a fourth. So now we have two fields. Lambda does not propagate. Or interact. We can integrate it out. Leaving minus 1 over 4 integral del t q squared. So of course I've gotten a bunch of factors of 2 wrong, but who cares? So this is a very useful technique for going from this first order expressions to these second order expressions by integrating out some massive fields. Does anybody have any? I found in the past people find this kind of confusing. So are there any questions about how this works or why we're allowed to do this?
What do you mean by lambda doesn't propagate or interact?
Right. So firstly, it doesn't interact with Q because there's no term in the Lagrangian involving both of them.
Yeah.
And you say it doesn't propagate. The term in the Lagrangian involving lambda does not have any derivatives. So suppose we were to view this as some kind of statistical mechanical system. So then, you know, lambda is some vibrating thing. So normally, the terms in the Lagrangian involving derivatives tell us how, you know, things are related at nearby points in the lattice. But now there are no such terms. So at different points in space-time, they're just completely independent. So for like, if I just look at this system with just lambda, this lambda squared, this is sometimes called the white noise measure, because at each value of spacetime, lambda just varies randomly, and at different points in spacetime, they're just uncorrelated.
Okay, but lambda still depends on p's and q's, right?
Well, I've done a change of coordinates on the field space, oh. So these are my new fields are lambda and q.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that equivalent to some of the equations of motion in P and Q, and then substituting P as a function of Q?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. I mean, at tree level, you can definitely say that. If you want to talk about things, we're not really doing that, but if I wanted to treat this path integral quantum mechanically, that wouldn't be fully satisfactory. But since it's a free theory anyway, actually there isn't very much quantum mechanics happening anyway. So. Okay, so if there are no more questions, I'll stop here.
Yes, one more.
Yeah.
So we'll be using a lot of techniques that are inspired from quantum mechanics and all that, but in classical mechanics. So what's really different about classical mechanics compared to quantum mechanics?
Well, like when we're using the techniques from quantum mechanics or quantum field theory, like Feynman diagrams, we're only looking at them to some leading order. Like when I wanted to say, what's the Poisson bracket in the phase space? And I use Feynman diagrams to compute that. So if you give me some really complicated operators in order to compute their brackets, in principle, there'll be some kind of horrendous number of loops. But we're only looking at a leading order contributions to derive the Poisson bracket. If you want to discuss quantum mechanics in the same language, we'd have to replace the Poisson bracket by the commutator, our leading order Feynman diagram computations by some all order computations, and that kind of thing.
So you never have to use the equations of motion when recovering the original Lagrangian. You can always just do a change of coordinates on phase space.
Well, so I wouldn't say it's a change of coordinates on phase space. It's a change of coordinates on the space of fields, which this a field is a path in phase space. Because I'm using, in my change of coordinates, I'm using the derivative in time. There's honestly not that much difference between looking at this thing and using the equations of motion. The equations of motion say lambda is zero, so or thinking about it in quantum mechanical terms and integrating lambda. They're very similar.